It was a different kind of Veterans Day yesterday. Bernhard Langer still claiming trophies 52 years after turning professional. He wasn't the only winner, though. We're also going to hear from Austin Eckroat, the latest champion on the PGA Tour. He's got a ways to go to catch Mr. Langer. And the DP World Tour wraps its season this week. Coming off another good week in Abu Dhabi, Rory McIlroy is headed to Dubai on the cusp of equaling a record held by the great Seve Ballesteros. And this week, a lot of golf fans will have their eyes on someone who doesn't actually play this game for a living. Caitlin Clark is teeing it up in a pro-am on the LPGA Tour. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
We have live golf on this Monday as we're getting you set for the Southwest Airlines Showcase at Cedar Crest. The second year tournament is an all-star invitational, celebrating the talents of top college-age golfers who are leaders in further diversifying the game. Coverage coming your way at 2:30 p.m. here on Golf Channel.
Welcome into Golf Today on this Veterans Day. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside a veteran that we're always thankful for here at Golf Channel, our senior writer and former corporal in the United States Marines, Rex Hoggart. Happy Veterans Day to you. What's on your mind today?
Veterans Day. I want to thank all the veterans. Obviously, it's so important. It's such a big day, certainly in my household it is. My father-in-law was in the Navy. He and I kind of go back and forth. We have fun with that, but it's such a special day. And then Sunday, I mean, that laid the groundwork for another amazing weekend, both on the PGA Tour, on the LPGA, PGA Tour champions.
There certainly is a lot to get to. And let's take a quick whip around the horn as we let you know what you need to know. On this Monday, we'll start on the PGA Tour, where Austin Eckroat won the Worldwide Technology Championship. That's thanks to a final round of 63. That tied his career low score on tour and his career high, 11 birdies in a single round. The victory is Eckroat's second PGA Tour title and his 70th start.
On the LPGA Tour, A. Lim Kim is the winner of the Lotte Championship. He earned her first tour win since the 2020 U.S. Women's Open title that made her an LPGA Tour member. Kim shot a 4-under 68 for her fourth consecutive round in the 60s and went wire to wire.
Now, over in the DP World Tour, Paul Waring took the trophy at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. Final round of 6-under 66. Finishing two clear of Tyrrell Hatton and three clear of a trio of players that included Rory McIlroy. The victory is Waring second on the DP World Tour.
Now, this is the one I love the most. Men of a certain age, Eamon, men of a certain age. On the PGA Tour champions, what a thrilling conclusion to the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. 67 years young, Bernhard Langer drained a 30-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole to win the season ender at Phoenix Country Club. The win is the 47th for Langer on the PGA Tour champions. He has now won for 18 straight years on the senior circuit. Meanwhile, it is Stephen Auker who captured the season-long Charles Schwab Cup points race. This is the second time the New Zealander has won the cup in 3 years. Along with the title, he earns a $1 million bonus.
And here's who's in action this week. The DP World Tour winding up its season in Dubai. The Amica driven by Gainbridge, the LPGA Tour down in Florida. And the FedEx Fall continues, the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. That's Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. It's time now for Golf Today Roundtable as we're joined by our colleague Todd Lewis and Golf Digest contributor Shane Ryan. Shane, I want to start with you on this. I suppose it's the political subtext that's been going on for weeks. The Tourist Policy Board is going to vote next week on a variety of changes that includes lowering the number of fully exempt players on tour, decreasing field sizes, eliminating a lot of the Monday qualifiers. Padraig Harrington was on the show last week, not a fan of it. Justin Lauer spoke in Mexico at the weekend, not a fan of it. And I want you to listen to this sound from Lucas Glover, also last week in Mexico.
Yeah, I thought it was asinine, like most of our recent changes. Limiting players doesn't help competition. We're the only sport that has decreased the number of teams or players. Every other sport has expanded their playoffs or expanded their fields, and we are doing the opposite. So I think it's asinine, and the tour's, I mean, their job description is to do what's right for the membership, not a few members.
Shane, these policy proposals came from the Players Advisory Council. They're being voted on by the policy board on the 18th. Is there any chance there's enough of a groundswell to actually impact that vote in your mind?
No, I don't think so. The way I look at all of these changes is through the lens of the PGA Tour is trying everything they can to keep their best players on side. And by that, I mean, of course, keep them from defecting to live. And so what they have done, I think, is effectively established an oligarchy that does include players, but most of the players it includes, or at least enough of the players, are the top line players who this stuff is going to benefit. So they have these committees who come up with these proposed changes, which, again, they feel they need to do. It's not a malicious act, but Lucas Glover's not wrong. It doesn't help the sort of journeymen or the lower line players. But these committees, which have a lot of great players on it, do this. And then it goes by the, you know, to the policy board, which has executives and, again, top line players that are going to vote it through. I think it's pretty much fait accompli at this point. So, I think they've set up a system where it doesn't matter what the groundswell is because it is rule from the top at this point.
Todd, last week on the round table, you had an opportunity to talk with Camilla Vichegas, who will take over, move on to the policy board next year. He was involved with some of these changes. You talked about the idea there was a level of confidence that the players would buy into that. That doesn't necessarily be the case. Do you think the tour needs to do anything as far as damage control at this point?
Well, I would say that the tour is actually pushing this to happen. I mean, sure, the PAC presented this and will present this proposal to the PGA Tour Policy Board, but this is something that the PGA Tour is, one, is streamlining competition. You're right. I did talk to Camilla Vichegas, and he is the chairman of the Player Advisory Council, and he told me this is why they're doing this. Number one, a big thing that's coming out of these PAC meetings is what does a PGA Tour card mean? And for those players that graduate from the Korn Ferry Tour, or come in through Q School, they feel like that those players aren't getting enough starts, and maybe four in the first 15 events on the PGA Tour. And they also said that 30 players graduate from the Korn Ferry Tour through the PGA Tour in positions 21 through 30 in the Korn Ferry standings. It's very challenging for them to keep their card, so they want to condense that. And if you take that train of thought and you combine that with these full field events having 156 players, you basically have traffic jams on Thursday and Friday. They can't complete play on those days, and so that clogs up everything. And so they are deciding, the PAC, have decided to put together this proposal. And again, I think it's being encouraged by the PGA Tour to contract field sizes and membership on the PGA Tour. Is this a positive? Do I think there's going to be a rift? Yes, I do. I think there is one right now. You heard Lucas Glover, who's an established player out there on the PGA Tour. One player told me that there is the PGA Tour and there is the PGB Tour that a lot of these players are talking about. And I think there's going to be some issues and some friction next season because of what's going to be proposed and probably approved by the board.
Shane, I'm wondering if there's a broader philosophical question here, because it's worth pointing out that these proposals have come from a body that includes guys who might be on the wrong side of them and will be voted on, by some guys who might find themselves on the wrong side of these proposals going forward. Should players be in the position of voting for rules that will impact the ability of other players to make a living, or ought that to be decided by an executive committee within the PGA Tour? And if they don't like the executives, replace them. But the idea of players voting on the ability of other players to make a living, is that in any case a concern for you?
No, I would say just the opposite. I think the only way you can preserve some level of democracy in this is to include the players. I mean, it is supposed to be a member-run organization. And I think not just with the PGA Tour, but with anybody in any walk of life, if you just let the executives decide, they're going to be deciding for the bottom line at every point. And the only way you counteract that or countermand that is to have a body of, you wouldn't call it a union. I think probably most PGA Tour members themselves would balk at that word and probably aren't pro-union themselves. But you do need the workers, for lack of a better term, you need the rank and file to have a say in this, or it's going to be a completely, top-down executive-run decision that always is going to default to profit, number one, and the preservation and safety of the top line in every case.
Todd, certainly on these roundtables the last few weeks, we've been doing a lot of hand-wringing when it comes to the fall and trying to figure out exactly what the identity of these events are after the Tour Championship. If I made you czar of professional golf just for the day, how do you fix the fall?
Wow, Rex, that's a great question. I mean, we're still talking about this vote that's probably going to be approved by the PGA Tour Policy Board about reducing memberships moving forward. So instead of guys fighting for the top 125 spots, they're going to be fighting for top 100 spots. And if you consider 70 are going to make it to the FedEx Cup playoffs and are going to secure their card, they're going to be battling for just 30 spots. So I don't know how you do this. I don't know if you bring in the guys who finished the best in the Korn Ferry Tour regular season, bring them into the fall. I really personally think there should be a DP World Tour component here. I think if you finish in the top 70 or definitely top 50 and make your way into the signature events next year, one thing that I feel like is an obligation, a responsibility to, since you've earned your right to play in these signature events, is to go play one or two events over on the DP World Tour, since they are, again, partners with the PGA Tour. But that's a great question. I mean, I if you made me czar, I need a lot of input from people who are smarter than me to help me figure this out.
On the subject of the DP World Tour, Shane, this week in Dubai we'll finalize who are the 10 best players not otherwise eligible for a PGA Tour card on that circuit. Do you think that's going to become a sore point as there's an increasing squeeze on Korn Ferry Tour guys and journeyman players who are on the PGA Tour now, that a certain resentment might build up at this strategic alliance that does give those 10 cards to the European guys? Or is that just going to turn the European circuit into the chief kind of pathway tour to the PGA Tour?
There's so much that's interesting about that dynamic. Like you pointed out, when this squeeze started, you know, if we expect all these new policies to go through, Korn Ferry gets squeezed from 30 to 20, DP World Tour stays the same. Now, they are still fewer. So if you're arguing, you know, what is the true AAA organization of the PGA Tour, you would still say the Korn Ferry Tour. And I'm sure the DP World Tour does not want to be seen as that. That wouldn't be their preferred choice of branding. At the same time, I think they would like more and more pathway for the top European golfers to come over and get their PGA Tour card, because, you know, that is still where the money is and the prestige and all that. So I think the answer is, yeah, there's going to be some simmering resentment there. And there is going to be a sort of battle over the next few years as to see, you know, does it keep condensing on the Korn Ferry Tour side? Does it keep increasing on the DP World Tour side? How is that decided? And how are those decisions made? Who has the priority? Right now, it looks like the DP World Tour, you put them a little bit ahead in that metric. But a lot can change, of course, depending on what happens here the next couple years.
We've got a lot more to talk about here. We want to hear more from Todd and Shane, which is something their wives never actually tell them. Golf Today, I'll be right back.
Golf Today, brought to you by Bushnell Golf and the new Pro X3. The best just got even better. And by Wind Grips, the best grips in golf.
If you're in the market for a podcast, Eamon, I'm sure you are, be sure to take a listen to the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lamb. I heard these two guys are pretty good. Handsome, too, right? And if you miss any of our show, check it out. The Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews for our show. Be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page as well. I'm sure on that podcast it'll have this interview with Shane Ryan and our very own Todd Lewis. Todd, I want to pivot a little bit here and talk about Rory McIlroy. You made news for a lot of reasons last week, but one was talking about his schedule going forward, and it's clear less is going to be more when it comes to Rory. What did you make of some of his comments?
Not surprised. I want to go back to earlier this year, and I spoke with Rory after he played a couple of events on the DP World Tour in the desert and then came over to the United States in Pebble Beach. I was walking with him, and we were talking about his schedule, and he went down, you know, all the tournaments he's going to play in 2024, which were a lot, and I asked him, wow, why are you increasing your schedule? And he said with a smile on his face, he said, Todd, I am a golfer. I'm supposed to play a lot of golf. But if you consider everything that happened with Rory McIlroy with that amount of golf off the golf course, if you remember the previous fall, he resigned from the PGA Tour Policy Board. And then after being frustrated that talks weren't going positively between the tour and PIF, decided to try to get back onto the board, but then ultimately made himself a part of the Subtransaction Committee, the group that negotiates with PIF to decide if there's a deal that's going to be made. So he's got that distraction. He had some personal distractions that were well documented at home. If you consider all that, I think he played pretty well in 2024. I may be in the minority. People are talking about his failures, but I mean, with everything that was happening here, which was a lot off the golf course, I didn't think he played poorly at all. I think he's going to try to to take himself off the golf course so he can give himself some freedom to focus on these issues, primarily what's going on with the tour and this possible deal with PIF. But yeah, I'm not surprised that he throttled back a bit. And, you know, I hope that he plays a little better in 2025.
Shane, this week in Dubai will be the 27th start this year for Rory McIlroy around the world. Compare that to Scottie Scheffler, who's just had 20. What I thought was interesting was the four events he said he won't play next year. He mentioned Hilton Head, he mentioned Palm Beach, he mentioned Texas, and he also mentioned the second of the FedEx Cup playoff events. The first one, the FedEx St. Jude Championship. That's got to ring some alarm bells at PGA Tour headquarters and FedEx headquarters, you'd think, right? If a guy who, presuming he qualifies, of course, for the FedEx Cup playoffs next year, decides that he can sit out a playoff event.
I would think it's not the most welcome news in Punta Vedra, but at the same time, they have gotten rid of the clause that says you can't miss, you know, more than one signature event. They have loosened restrictions a little bit. Again, just like I said earlier, you have to look at this stuff through the lens of how do we keep our best players on our team? And Rory's been very frustrated with how a lot of the negotiations have gone, and they want to keep him happy. And Rory obviously feels that he's taken on way too much, probably both in a playing sense and in a bureaucratic administrative sense, being the face of the PGA Tour for the last 3 years. And so he really needs to cut it back in his mind. And quite frankly, whether it raises alarm bells or not, all of the power, you know, the ball is in his court. He's got all the power and they're not going to stop him from doing this. So it kind of doesn't matter if they're concerned, I would say.
Todd, switching gears to the PGA Tour champions, Bernhard Langer made history again, becoming the oldest player to win on that tour again. What does it say about his longevity and what he means to that tour?
I think what it says more, Rex, is his commitment. I mean, he really is committed to excellence, to borrow a line from Al Davis of what was the Oakland Raiders and then became some other cities throughout the NFL. But, I mean, he still eats well. He works out in the gym. I think... this may raise some antennas. I think he's one of the best game managers, in the game of golf, up there with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. He knows what he can do. I mean, 47 wins in the PGA Tour Champions. If you consider that such a smaller window, in my opinion, and when you can achieve greatness on that tour once you turn 50, and for him to do it for 17 plus years and to win that many events, it's just remarkable. I'm actually surprised he didn't win more on the PGA Tour. He won three times. Now, two of them were the Masters and the other ones that Hilton had, but he did win 42 times on the DP World Tour, the European Tour. But I mean, this will go down, I mean, as you know, one of the greatest achievements in the game of golf, 47 events and winning at the age of 67. And I think he could win a few more as well.
Shane, later this week, Caitlin Clark is going to play the LPGA Tour event Pro-Am in Florida. You know, on the men's side, we've had this kind of saturation of celebrity coverage over the years. It doesn't necessarily appeal to every fan. How important is it, do you think, to disassociate that from the potential impact that a Caitlin Clark could have in terms of bringing eyeballs to the women's game this week?
Yeah, you're asking the right guy. I love Caitlin Clark. I became pretty much obsessed with her this year. I'm not joking. I watched more WNBA games than any other sport. And this is somebody who I don't think ever watched one WNBA game. I loved watching the end of Fever. I'm psyched that they've got a new coach. No, I really think Caitlin Clark is a really impactful athlete with a lot of magic in her. And she's somebody who captures everybody's attention, including a 41-year-old dude who only watches golf, right? And so anytime you can get somebody like that and get her in the mix here, I think it's huge. And it, you know, just increases golf's visibility and cements the message that, you know, golf is cool. We can associate golf with somebody like this who is one of the greatest athletes and one of the most, you know, influential athletes coming up in the whole world.
And if nothing else, she's also given the golf world something to talk about in November, when sometimes storylines can be a little thin on the ground, but not right now. Todd, Shane, always good to spend time with you. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
The DP World Tour is wrapping its season-long race to Dubai this week in, well, you've guessed it, Dubai. Rory McIlroy has a commanding lead in that points rankings as he attempts to tie Xavi Ballesteros with his sixth title. More on him coming up after the break.
We're back on Golf Today as we check in on the LPGA Tour. A. Lim Kim is the winner of the Lotte Championship. She earned her first tour win since the 2020 U.S. Women's Open title that made her an LPGA Tour member. Kim shot a 4-under 68, her fourth consecutive round in the 60s, and went wire to wire for the victory. Let's see who's in the race to the CME Globe. See, Nelly Korda remains out front thanks to her 6 wins in 2024. We have not seen the world number one tee it up since mid-September when she finished in a tie for fifth at the Kroger Queen City Championship.
Well, Nelly returns to action this week at the Annika, driven by Gainbridge at Pelican. This is the LPGA's last regular season event. After this week, the top 60 on the CME Globe standings qualify for the season-ending CME Group Tour Championship. And it's not just those who play for a living who are getting some attention this week. WNBA superstar Caitlin Clark will tee it up in the Pro-Am on Wednesday. Talk about an all-star grouping. She's going to play with tournament host Annika Sørenstam and with Nelly Korda. We will have coverage of Caitlin Clark's Pro-Am on Wednesday from the Annika, driven by Gainbridge. You can see highlights from the Pro-Am on Golf Today and on Golf Central. And with more on this, we welcome in our colleagues Amy Rogers, along with Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols. Beth Ann, I want to start with you on this Caitlin Clark story. It's going to get a lot of attention this week, and it's very easy for cynical golf fans to say we've had saturation coverage of celebrities around golf for years. That's not true in women's golf. This could really be impactful, right?
Absolutely. I can't remember a time I was as excited for Pro-Am. I planned to be out there at 6 a.m. to watch the warm-up session. You know, that's probably the only drawback, is that she is teeing off at 7 a.m. But I'm thrilled. You know, common sense doesn't always prevail with the LPGA, and I'm thrilled that it has in this case, that we have world number one Nelly Korda playing alongside Caitlin, as well as Annika Sørenstam, of course, the tournament host. And I'm just really looking forward, because when basketball, you know, we're watching a basketball game, it's so fast paced. Golf, we're going to get so many hours to watch her up close, see how she interacts with fans, see how she reacts to good and bad shots, how she interacts with the LPGA players and other members of the Pro-Am group. You know, I think it's going to be a unique opportunity for fans of Caitlin Clark to see her in another light. And I can't wait to see how many young kids and families are out there.
Amy, we just were talking about Nelly Korda. It's been such an enigma this season. She got off to an unbelievably fast start, historic start to this season, but then injuries, hasn't played since mid-September. How do you think she's going to finish out the year?
Who knows, right? To your point, we've seen a little bit of everything from Nelly Korda this season. So it's really tough to gauge how she is going to return in this return to competition on the LPGA Tour. We haven't seen her since September. She planned to play in two of those events during the Asia swing, but suffered what she described as a minor neck injury. And so we haven't seen her compete in quite some time now. And when she has had these layoffs before, it's been kind of a wild card. She had huge success to start the season, 6 wins early in the year, that last win coming back in May. But then we saw those string of missed cuts, and she's only been averaging one start per month. So there really have already been a lot of starts and stops to her year so far. So to answer, not really answer your question, I don't think we really know what to expect when Nelly Korda tees it up this week. We've seen the greatest things possible from her so far this season, and we've seen some really low moments as well. So it's kind of tough to predict.
Amy, just sticking on Nelly's schedule for a moment, that does actually have an impact beyond when we get to see her. She's now not eligible for the Vera Trophy for the lower scoring average on the LPGA Tour, despite the wins and being a dominant world number one. It seems like kind of a weird situation here in some ways, right?
It does. So for the third time in 5 years, it looks like the winner of the Vera Trophy, which is given to the player with the lowest scoring average at the end of the season, won't actually be the player with the best scoring average. So in 2020 and in 2021, this happened as well, as the player that was at the top of the standings didn't actually take home the Vera Trophy. Now, following 2021, when Nelly Korda, Invy Park, and Jin Young Ko all were ineligible because they hadn't played the requisite number of rounds to qualify, the LPGA made some changes to the criteria, and they included things like the Olympics and some other team events. So those were factored into the number of rounds that players would play. Well, to your point with Korda then withdrawing from the Asia swing, she was not going to play the requisite number of rounds now to qualify for the Vare Trophy, despite leading the tour in scoring average. So during that Asia stretch, when Korda wasn't playing, it's Gino Tittakoon who pulls ahead in the scoring average for the season. Well, now Tittakoon has withdrawn from this week's event, the Annika. Interestingly, she has also pulled ahead and is at the top of the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge. And should she win that at the end of this week's event, it comes with a $1 million prize. And I think there might be a little bit of a conflict happening here, Bethy. And perhaps you could elaborate a little bit more on this conflict and maybe the reasoning behind why Tittakoon is not playing this week.
Yeah, I want to preface this by saying I have not spoken directly to Gino to find out exactly why she withdrew. But all she had to do was make the cut at the Pelican, play four rounds at the CME, and the award was her, which of course comes along with a Hall of Fame point. But when she withdrew, the alarm bells go off because we've seen this happen so many times. Because when it comes to the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge, when you have a sizable lead, it actually plays to your advantage to not play. So, you know, players are going to have to double eagle and eagle the hole next week in order to have a chance, which is highly unlikely. She betters her chances of taking home that $1 million prize by staying home, which seems kind of counterproductive to have, you know, players trying to win a Vare Trophy in the Hall of Fame point, which if you talk to some of the, you know, retired players, they'll say that's actually the true measure of a successful season because it measures consistency. Every shot counts. To then say, well, wait a second, I really want that $1 million. So I don't have an answer, but I hope that this is something that is looked at during the off season, because I would love to see this not happening where we players can both win the $1 million and get their Hall of Fame point.
Beth Ann, still on the subject of Nelly, it emerged over the weekend that she's part of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, which I suppose these days feels like something of an anachronism in the world, but it certainly gets a lot of eyeballs. Do you think that's more evidence that Nelly's becoming more comfortable in the spotlight, more comfortable with being the face and voice of women's golf?
Well, you know, I definitely think she enjoyed the Met Gala experience, and you know, I think she said she felt like a princess, and she enjoyed that whole scene. And so I think, you know, similarly, you know, it's being she looks like a runway model, so maybe she's comfortable in modeling and actually modeling. And so I think, you know, for Nelly, this is something that seems to be up her alley in terms of what she likes to do for off the golf course exposure. Maybe it's easier for her than doing a late night show, for example, where it's live and you're on the spot. You know, it'll be interesting to see how she continues to evolve, because I definitely think she's taking some steps in the right direction of putting herself out there more and saying yes a little bit more.
Amy, I wanted to get your thoughts on this week's Annika by Gamebridge, because the idea is the sponsor, the host, certainly the legend, brings in a lot of interest, but it's become very popular among the players. What's the key to this event's success?
It has been important from this event's inception to become a preeminent event on the LPGA Tour, and they've done just that in just 5 short years. When I was on site at the event in 2021, I spoke with Dan Doyle Jr., who is the owner of Pelican Golf Club, and he told me then that he wants to make this tournament the equivalent of what the men have in going to Augusta each year. And they've made huge strides to try and do that. They offer a purse that's one of the largest outside the majors and the CME Group Tour Championship, and they have a venue that players really enjoy. You have someone like Lilia Vu, who said ahead of her title defense this year that she loves this golf course. And that means a lot. And the fact that this has become a must-play event on the LPGA schedule, given where it's positioned, it's the week before the CME Group Tour Championship, where these women are trying to compete for the biggest payday ever, a $4 million winner's check, but they want to make sure to be here and they want to play in this event. I think that goes a long way. And adding someone like a tournament host and Annika Sorenstam, I would think Beth Ann has gone a long way in just further elevating this event to where it is today.
Absolutely. I mean, it comes as no surprise when you look at how meticulous Annika was in every aspect of her career that she's the same way in hosting an event. You know, she takes all the answers in the survey that goes out to the players very seriously. You know, she's paying attention to spectator parking. When she goes to another event, she's taking notes on what they're doing well. And I think to the Doyle's credit, you know, when she sees something that she thinks might be a good idea to change for the next year, it actually oftentimes is implemented the next day. So this sort of perfectionist attitude permeates throughout the event. And, you know, I also think that when we look at so many players stepping away from the game earlier and earlier in their careers, especially big name stars, you know, it's so helpful to have these events hosted by an Annika Sorenstam, you know, Michelle Wee West, Sayri Park, so that it's not just the odd champions dinner that players get a chance to reconnect with you know, these Hall of Famers and big time stars, but that they see them on an annual basis.
Well, if Annika's paying attention to spectator parking as well, maybe we should put her in charge of a Solheim Cup as well, Bethan. Brittany Lincecum's walking away this week, one of the players you mentioned who's retiring. Last week, it was Angela Stanford played her last event of the Lotte Championship in Hawaii. How cool was it to see what she did on that final hole on Friday just to extend her career by a couple more rounds?
Right, that eagle, she said, thank you, Mom. You know, Hawaii was definitely a favorite spot of her mother's, and her late mother, Nan, was her biggest fan. So she definitely a little nod toward the heavens there, you know. And I also thought it was awesome that she hit every green coming in on that back nine. You know, iron play has been the hallmark of her strength all these years. And so it meant a lot for her to finish off her final round feeling like vintage Angela Stanford. And, you know, this is a player who has accomplished so much inside the ropes, but I just want to keep mentioning what she does outside the ropes, because the amount of money that she's raised for families who have been impacted by cancer to still be able to afford to go to college. You know, Angela's a player who, you know, wore blue on Sundays to represent her blue collar roots. It means so much to her to give back. And I think her legacy in the game, not just inside the ropes, but that sustained excellence that carried on outside the ropes will be remembered for a long time.
Certainly one of the great people in this game. We can't wait to see what Angela's next chapter is. Bethan, Amy, thanks for the time as always.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Before we get to break, let's take a look at the Louise Suggs Rolex Rookie of the Year race. Maya Seigel continues to lead the way, 7 top 10s this season. Now, you don't often get to see a guy who admits changing his putter almost every week win on the PGA Tour, but I guess Austin Eckroat isn't like everyone else on the PGA Tour. He's your latest winner out there. More on him coming up after this short break. Time now for Winning Moments, presented by WinGrips. The final round 63 carried Austin Eckroat to victory at the Worldwide Technology Championship yesterday down in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. That tied his career low score on tour. He set another high as well, a career high 11 birdies in his round. The victory was his second PGA Tour title in a 70th start. The first one came back in March at the Cognizant Classic at PGA National.
How about this? 5 years ago, Austin Eckroat won the Cabo Collegiate as a sophomore at Oklahoma State. On Sunday, he secured his second tour victory right down the road and now has the most wins by a PGA Tour University alum. He is now the seventh player with multiple victories on tour this season. Top that list, no surprise, Scottie Scheffler with 7 victories, followed by Rory McIlroy, Robert McIntyre, Xander Schauffele, Nick Dunlap, and Hideki Matsuyama, all with 2 victories this season. Following his round in Cabo, Austin spoke to the media about the significance of that second victory.
It's just really special. You get that first win and, you know, you make the joke that maybe this will open the floodgates and, you know, they're going to start flying. And, you know, I think that second win kind of, you know, solidifies that you can win on the PGA Tour. You know, there's times, you know, you can't just say it was lucky this time. You know, I've done it twice now. It's pretty cool.
On your PGA bio, it says that one of your first memories is watching Tiger Woods in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to you to win here in a design by Tiger Woods?
Yeah, it's really cool. Tiger was definitely my favorite player growing up, no doubt about it. And, I got to watch him play at Southern Hills during the 2007 PGA Championship. So I was 8 years old and... you know, I remember watching him hit the putt at Torrey Pines. I didn't watch it. I had my head tucked in the couch because I couldn't watch it. I was so nervous. And, you know, to win at a place that he built, that's just pretty cool. Yeah, that's awesome. He's my idol for sure.
As a tour winner, you guys are an inspiration to fans, to new generations. So I would like to have your words on for the new generations, inspire them to follow on your first footsteps and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, I think a great, you know, the best thing about golf is that it doesn't, you know, you can get started at such a young age, and it's something you can do for the rest of your life. And there's so many benefits to playing the game of golf. You know, obviously, even if you don't make it to the top level, it's something to do with your friends on the weekend, something to do with your kids one day, and you can do it for your whole life. And, you know, to get involved in the game of golf is, you know, I always, all of my buddies that I have now that didn't play growing up wish they played now. And, yeah, just if I can be someone that encourages people to play golf, I'd love to be that guy and happy to be that guy.
After your two wins in 2024, what are your next goals for 2025? What's the next thing that would you like to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, to think of some long-term goals would obviously be, you know, be a major champion. You know, that's probably the, you know, the biggest next step would be to win a major. Obviously, on top of that, making the Ryder Cup next season would be a, you know, a huge goal of mine. And I still haven't made it to the Tour Championship on the PGA Tour, so making it to East Lake Cup would be an awesome, you know, cherry on top to a great season. So, it's, yeah, probably those are the three, you know, main goals going into next season.
Did I hear correctly that you made a switch at with your putter? And if so, can you just talk about that decision?
Yeah, that's a week-to-week thing. I switch putters about every week. But, yeah, this is actually my first win since I was 13 years old without the same exact putter. So I've used the same ping putter. I switch away from it, but every time I've won has been with that putter. And then this is my first win since I was 13 years old with a different putter, which is kind of crazy.
Safe to say you're going to keep it in the rotation?
It's definitely in the rotation. It's not safe yet. There's a good chance next time I play golf there'll be a different one in. But it felt very good this week.
In the Masters, the next April, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I got to play my first Masters this season, this last season, and I didn't do too well. So I'm looking for revenge on Augusta National. You know, it's always such a cool week. And, you know, I had such high expectations going into it last year, and I really kind of let myself down, and I was really hoping that wasn't the last time I ever got to do it. So I'm glad I get to do it again and get some revenge.
We'll finish off with you had a crazy stretch in your beginning after the first win, didn't maybe have the most time to celebrate. What does the celebration look like tonight?
Yeah, it's very different than last time I won. I went straight to, drove 3 hours to Orlando and started playing golf, you know, the next day. And, you know, this time I've got a little time off, and I'm sure it's going to get a little crazy. So I'm excited to actually have some time to celebrate this win for sure.
Well, just two events remain on the FedEx Cup fall. This week, the tour heads to Port Royal Golf Course for the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. It's no vacation week, though. Still quite a lot at stake for the guys competing. Those who finish in the top 125 of the FedEx Cup fall standings secure exempt status for 2025. Those who finish 126 through 150 in the standings have only conditional status for the season. Let's hear from one of those players just inside the bubble.
How conscious are you of your spot on the FedEx Cup fall standings, and does the tension increase as the season nears its end?
Yeah, like I said, I've been lucky enough the last, for basically 6 or 7 years, I don't have to worry about it. But it's a different type of pressure. I mean, I knew I was going to win a golf tournament today, but you feel like you're kind of in contention. It matters a lot. I mean, you can't hide from it. It's there. I know that Gino's doing a great job of just kind of going about her business. My wife is amazing about pretending everything's okay, but and everything is okay. It's not like it's the end of the world, but I want to play good golf, and I want to be out here on the PGA Tour.
What would it mean for you to finish inside the top 125?
I think it would mean more this year, just the grind that it's been. Golf has been relatively easy for me for, you know, quite a few years, so I haven't really been in this position before, and it would mean a lot. I mean, it's really hard to keep grinding when things aren't going your way. And, you know, like I said, there's a lot of pressure this week. The next two coming up are, and that's a lot. So it means that you can, I mean, finishing 30th might be good enough type thing. So that's almost harder than when you're in contention. But yeah, it would mean the world.
That really kind of speaks to what these last few events of the year are, the 7 or 8 events in this FedEx fall schedule. I guess my question is, Rex, who is being served by the FedEx Cup fall? What we just heard from Joel Damon, to me, points the reality of it, who it's for, which is the players. And it means a great deal to the players. They're playing for the right to earn a living next year, or an easier or more accessible right to earn a living than they would if they were further down in that points list. I'm not convinced yet that it's serving fully either the fans or the sponsors of those events, simply because it has become the territory where a lot of journeymen and some stars who've fallen down as well. We see a lot of Ricky Fowler this fall as well. It's not necessarily a compelling product unless you're already a hardcore fan.
And I don't think that's who it's for. We're not trying to bring in new fans. I think when you look at who are in these fields, who are not in these fields, is probably the bigger question. You simply aren't getting any of the stars to come and play in these events. I don't think the tour anticipated getting them. However, I will say, to answer your question, it's for the membership, 100%. It's about creating and providing playing opportunities for the members, not only to keep their tour cards, but to try to get their tour cards. It's a compelling part of the game. And I think the PGA Tour, through a lot of ebb and flow, had come to some sort of conclusion that, okay, this is what the vault is. It's a 7, 8, 9 week Q school, and you start telling these stories of Joel Damon, just like we saw on air. S.H. Kim, who slipped out of the top 125 this week. These are compelling stories that if you can get that in front of your average golf fan, they're probably going to pay attention to some level. I think where it kind of unravels is where we are right now.
Yeah.
It's so confusing, and it's so difficult to figure out exactly who's where. And with Austin winning, that's great. He was already inside the top 50.
Yeah.
So you're having to tell these stories on the way out. I'll actually turn it on you, because I'd be really curious and ask you the same thing I asked Todd. You're a czar for the day of professional golf. How do you fix it?
Well, that's the interesting rub here, isn't it? We see where it fits in the context of what the PGA Tour is now. What the PGA Tour might be in the wake of any proposed deal with the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund is another matter, because you also fit in the third component of that, which is the DP World Tour. And we've heard Rory McIlroy and certainly other people advocate the idea of having a more global component to the schedule. That, and everything that a lot of the smart people in the room talk about, is the idea of protecting the FedEx Cup schedule as best they can. So perhaps at the start of the year, there's a more global component. Perhaps it's those European events that folks like to watch in the run-up to the Open Championship, you know, a Scottish Open, an Irish Open. The BMW at Wentworth, obviously protected. But then once you move post-Labor Day, that you start to capitalize on those global events that have legacy, you know, the Australian Open, the South African Open, a lot of other events that would then lead up to some kind of conclusion in the Middle East. Well, when you look at private equity guys having poured $1.5 billion into the PGA Tour and perhaps doing the same again, are they going to look upon this time of the year as a good narrative? It's feel-good stories about guys who are out there grinding and fighting for their card, or are they going to see it as a dilution of the product if there is a more global component to it? And so much of that depends on whether or not the deal is done and what the reality of the deal looks like, because it's very possible the PGA Tour might continue to operate as it does, and that the impact that would be seen in terms of that deal might involve more of the European Tour and the Saudis and the PGA Tour.
What a fascinating conversation. But this goes to what we were talking about with Todd and Shane earlier in the show, the idea that private equity has stepped in. We have seen it. It has a lot to do with why we're going to have 100 players essentially under this new plan who stay qualified for the PGA Tour. The Korn Ferry Tour cards have gotten cut. This is all about trying to make the product better. This is what they feel like they need to move towards. So then you turn the page, and what makes the product better in the fall? And it leads to a bigger conversation that you and I have had before. If I gave you a blank piece of paper and I told you that after the Tour Championship, you come up with the best possible schedule with or without a deal, and I know those are probably going to look vastly different, but you and I could come up with a really, really cool schedule that includes those legacy events, the Australian PGA, the Australian Masters, the Australian Open, as well as some DP World Tour events and some really good events here in the United States. But how you make all that work with the membership, I just don't understand yet.
And the membership are really driving the bus. loss here. I mean, Robert Garrigues made the field in Mexico last week as the 34th alternate. Fair play to Robert Garrigues. He was there. He didn't have to fly down. He got his spot. But nobody is served by that kind of scenario other than Robert Garrigues.
And I don't think they're any closer to a solution now than they have been in the past. As a matter of fact, I would say they're probably further away because of where we are in golf right now. But you look at conclusions. That's what we all want. Certainly the PGA Tour champions had that conclusion last week. When you look at the finish, that included Bernhard Langer. What an unbelievable finish. The 2024 PGA Tour champions season. Langer makes history once again. We show you how he got it done when we return.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
And we are back on Golf Today on February 2nd. That was a long time ago. Bernhard Langer had surgery to repair a torn left Achilles tendon. Just 3 months later, he returned to action. Fast forward to Sunday, the 67-year-old drained a 30-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole to win the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Phoenix Country Club. The win is his 47th for Langer on the PGA Tour Champions. He now has won for 18 straight years on the senior circuit. Here you see the level of dominance with 47 wins on the PGA Tour Champions. Langer now has two more all-time PGA Tour Champions wins than Hale Irwin. Let's hear from the World Golf Hall of Famer now.
When we arrived here on Monday, I mentioned to Terry that, you know, we haven't won this year and we only got one more chance. And this was the least likely one to win because I had just never done very well here for some reason. But I had one of the best putting weeks of my life. And greenkeeping staff, I owe you one. Well done. Great job.
Well, two pieces of hardware were given out yesterday. Stephen Alker won the season-long Charles Schwab Cup race. Second time he's taken it in 3 years. We heard from him.
It's been a heck of a journey. You know, there's so many people to thank. I mean, I've got Team Alker in my bag. This doesn't happen without just me. So many people to thank. It's been a heck of a ride just to get here and win another one. I know how Bernhard feels now. Not really. I mean, he's won seven or eight or whatever, but just another one. I mean, obviously, I'd like to win today. But Bernhard, we've got to give a hand for Bernhard. He's incredible. He really is. Really is.
Well, Alker went to Phoenix Country Club second in the standings, but rounds of 63-66 over the weekend managed to overtake Ernie Els, with Richard Green, Padraig Harrington, and Stephen Ames rounding out the top five.